In the days following November's election results, Atlanta journalist and photographer Maura Freedman noticed a dialogue emerging among women of the Southeast. She set out to capture some of their stories, the resulting portraits and interviews on how these women were preparing for the incoming Trump administration were featured in Bust magazine. Freedman sat down with producer Mike Johns to talk about the work.
I saw kind of these two totally different narratives, one being the protests that were happening, the Not My President chants. The other that was coming a lot from like party establishment people was that we need to give Donald Trump a chance to be president, that we need to kind of wait and see. And in between, especially through social media and in a lot of private groups I'm in for women on Facebook and on Slack, saw a totally different narrative of what are we going to do? And I was interested in that because it also felt, it was quieter and it felt more real in some ways. I think the give him a chance and then the protest, that's like a really easy clashing narrative. But then to sit down and say, like, what does this look like in your own life? I thought got more to the heart of why people were scared and upset and sad.
So can you introduce me to some of the women that you talked to?
It looked different for everyone. So there's Michelle, who is getting an intrauterine device, long-lasting birth control, partially not knowing when that, if that would be, what availability would look like for that in the future, and also questioning reproductive rights and the future of that.
Immediately after Trump won, I started to think about my personal reproductive rights being threatened. Yeah, I had like been contemplating an IUD, but I kind of felt like it wasn't a pressing issue. But I think now is going to be the best time to get an IUD that there's going to be in the next many years. I'm going to finish making my appointment today and then going in the next week or two.
Then Adron, who is an Atlanta musician, looking at the steps to be sterilized, both because she was worried about her reproductive rights in the future, but also I was interested that it was more of like a proactive stance, that she is very into the environment and issues of overpopulation and was like, now is the time to make really important declarative statements and live our politics. There is a woman who didn't want to be identified, who is Muslim and was starting to like build a safe house network for her undocumented friends.
I couldn't help but think, wow, I have a lot of other people in much more of a dire situation than me because they're undocumented who may need that space. And so I reached out to friends of mine and I said, is anyone willing to offer their home as a space if it ever gets to that? And so what I did was I put their name, their telephone number, and whether or not they can feed the individual.
Another woman who also didn't want to be identified, who is Black, has mixed children, and was basically like, it's not my job to fix people's perceptions. I want to move my children to an area where there will still be big instances of institutional racism, but we won't be confronted constantly. And then an activist, Tiffany, a Black female activist, who was pivoting all of her activism work to focus on Black female self-care. Because statistically, we see that like Black women showed up and voted for Clinton. She was like, I think it's time for me and for a lot of people in our community to turn inward and see what we need to, in her words, not only survive but thrive. There was also LA, who is identifies as non-binary.
I think before the election happened, I was okay and kind of felt proud when people questioned what my gender was. Once the results started coming in, I kind of got this wave of fear. So I chose to go with changing my gender marker on my passport, which is kind of the first step, and then changing my name as well. It's a weird and unsettling feeling to feel like I have to pick one when I don't believe there are just two genders.
It's a really diverse and varied set of both people and concerns. Having had all of these conversations and taken this all in, what did you take away from working on this project?
Yeah, so it started as this idea of, it was almost a study on the very real implications that fear has in people's lives, because we were in this suspended place that we're in every time there's a presidential election, where we know who's going to be in charge, we know what they wanted to do. We also know that we live in a country made up of checks and balances and a lot of inertia and bureaucracy in government. So what will actually come to fruition of all of those campaign promises? And I think my biggest takeaway that was, so something I knew going into this from conversations I was having with people, is that people who are marginalized, who see themselves as potentially being personally attacked by campaign promises that Donald Trump had made, were taking action in their own lives. So they were taking control. I thought that was interesting. Something that I didn't expect, but that felt very real to how women are socialized, and also my own experience as a woman, is that women, and I think often non-binary people, end up being the caretakers for their communities, be that a family or a group of people or a neighborhood. And the one thing that all of these people had in common is they said, I want to make these changes and these preparations so that I can better serve the people around me.
Have you kept in touch with, followed up with these women since speaking with them?
Yeah. So Michelle has her IUD. Adrian is still in the process, I think, of figuring things out with sterilization. I know that LA did have their gender markers on the passport changed to be male, and is now fundraising, crowdsourcing for top surgery. And the woman who is moving her family has picked a place. They have plans in process. Yeah.
Yeah. Being a journalist, it's sort of interesting when you're working with a subject like this. I mean, because there's a number of ways that you can sort of not just go about doing it, but the attitude that you take towards the work as you're doing it. You can sort of act as a documentarian, as a mute observer. You could be an advocate and sort of engage directly with your subject and their cause. Can you talk about, you know, sort of where you fall on that spectrum?
Yeah, I definitely see myself as a documentarian. I did think to myself, well, if I'm only talking to people who are worried about a Trump presidency, what would the other side look like? And in talking to folks, and maybe there were things that people were doing that I just didn't encounter in my reporting, but like people who were really excited about a Trump presidency didn't feel the need to make any preparations. So it felt like they fell outside of the scope of this particular project. And I think in everything that I do, and I think it especially works, goes hand in hand with a visual medium, is trying to build empathy and just giving people the space and the access to look into someone's life that is maybe similar to theirs, oftentimes different, and hear their unvarnished perspective. It's part of why, like I was saying earlier, it felt like an important conversation to kind of magnify that I was seeing happening versus protests, which are still an incredibly legitimate thing to document and like were happening and say something totally different and equally important. But it felt like a lot of people I was talking to who, again, were excited about a Trump presidency just like didn't understand why people were in the streets. And so this was more a practice of being like, well, why don't I let them tell you? Which was the other important part to me was that it's a portrait series of women and non-binary people in their own homes. So I think from that, there's already like a level of intimacy that they're establishing with you as the audience, getting to see their space. I think it says a lot about each individual. And then there's the interview component where you get to hear people in their own words.
And speaking of the protests, the day after the inauguration, you were at the Women's March here in Atlanta. You're one of the 60,000 people who marched from downtown to the Capitol, and you had your camera with you. Can you talk about capturing that experience?
Yeah. So I was there also as a documentarian. I wonder how there were 60,000 people there. I wonder how many people were documenting and lots of cameras. And yeah, that was another that was definitely another exercise in. There are these marches happening all over the country. It was really fascinating because I have been reporting for a long time, have thus gone to a lot of marches, and this one felt so different. There were so many more people than any other local march that I had ever covered. It also had a really different vibe. It was just easy to tell that a lot of people... It was easy to tell, and then also talking to people, they would tell me that it was a lot of people's first time engaging. It was like a very chill march. Like, it was hard for organizers to even get chants going because I think people were like, oh, we're just like kind of leisurely walking because there's so many people. There could be no sort of like speed or direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it felt important to cover. But how could I do it differently and again highlight small moments, quiet moments where maybe you could spend more time with that piece and you don't have to agree, but maybe just see some more humanity in people who think differently from you.
Yeah, you've been touching on this sort of bigger idea of... telling stories visually and being a journalist and being a photographer, documentarian. This is interesting. We get to compare notes a little bit here.
Yeah.
Radio being, you know, this is a completely audio driven medium where, you know, we tell stories by talking. Can you talk about the importance of the visual medium, of people seeing what you're looking at?
Yeah. I just think with visuals, it's something that's really easy for anyone to consume and to sort of dive into. There's not the same language barrier that there is with the written word or audio. I think it's also easier to kind of like catch people and drag them into things that they're maybe not interested in. That happens a lot. I'm sure people can attest to on social media where you see a cool image and then all of a sudden you're sucked into a story you didn't realize you would be interested to read. And I think with visuals, it's just a lot easier to see the common thread. Again, going back to people's homes and that I photographed people in their homes for this story, I think that was partially to convey the intimacy that these issues, that these political issues are going to have in people's lives. And also partially, hopefully, for other people to see some similar themes. Like the Muslim woman, when I walked in, she was kind of taking me around her house and like we could shoot anywhere. And I was like, I love your living room because it's so all-American. Like, it looks like an Ashley Furniture, like, home goods setup. And she is American, and she is all-American. And I think that is something that maybe someone wouldn't think seeing her out in public, that, like, you might have the same sofa.
Yeah.
That was freelance journalist Maura Friedman. Her feature on how women are preparing for the Trump administration is in Bust magazine. We'll have a link on our website, wabe.org.